LegalizeFreedom.com. Why are we here? Where do we come from? Where are we going? From the nature of reality to the future of humanity. Beyond politics, poverty, and war. LegalizeFreedom.com.
Greetings and welcome once again to LegalizeFreedom.com. I'm your host Greg Moffat, and my guest today is Engelbert Winkler, who joins us to discuss the power and potential of light and the development of the Lucia No. 3 hypnagogic lamp. Light is essential to life, and it affects the brain and body in ways both subtle and dramatic. But beyond warming our skin and growing our food, how many of us ever really afford it a second thought? Even the sublime beauty of the sunset all too often slips away unseen. Cutting-edge research, however, is revealing properties of light which, although appearing to us as an unfolding paradigm, are in truth resonant reflections of insights and experiences that many of our ancient ancestors would have instinctively understood. In ages past, powerful psychoactive effects of light changed lives, shaped entire cultures, and may even have led to the founding of religions, some of which are still with us today. Whilst exploring these almost antediluvian mysteries, we shed light on the future, from near-death experiences and so-called mental illness, to light's therapeutic potential to heal trauma, transform our states of being, and evolve consciousness itself. Hello and welcome, Engelbert, and thank you so much for joining us today on LegalizeFreedom.com.
Hello, Greg.
Engelbert, today we're going to be talking about the Lucia hypnagogic lamp and your work with that. Before we get started on that, if you could just tell listeners, please, a little bit about your background and your work in general.
Yeah, my background is that I'm a psychologist and a psychotherapist. I studied in Austria, and there is also my office. Mainly, I work for the youth office with children and young people with severe behavioral problems and with their families. And as a psychotherapist, I have focused my interest on light and how light can influence the psyche of the clients. There is the background that I'm a researcher on near-death experience, because as a child I had a near-death experience in the age of 7 years, and I think this was also the reason why I studied psychology. And when I did my training as a psychotherapist, I tried to find ways to use the healing potential of the near-death experience for my psychotherapy, because it is well known, and I think since the 80s, when Kenneth Ring, the American psychologist, did some research on the after effects of the near-death experience, and he found out that people with deep near-death experience, where there was a light experience, a confrontation with a bright light included, they had remarkable changes of their personal attitudes, but also a kind of spontaneous remissions of mental and bodily diseases. And that is very remarkable, as the near-death experience usually is just for some minutes. And so when I did my work as a psychotherapist, I started to use hypnosis with my clients to induce NDE-like experiences. helping people go very deep in an altered state of consciousness, stay there for a while, and when they come back, see what after effects establish. This was quite amazing for some clients, but not for all of them, as some clients had quite difficulties when they were in a trance state and with closed eyes, imagining themselves a bright light. So I started using external lights, I mean steady lights, which improved the whole thing a lot. And the feedbacks of my clients and the outcomes were so amazing that a friend of mine, a neurologist, was also very stunned by that, what he could hear. And we made some EEG research on that and saw that the EEG showed remarkable changes. So it was his idea to combine the steady light with the flickering light. First, it was his intention to kind of simulate a tunnel experience by accelerating the speed of the flickering light. And so we had our first prototype of the lamp, as you can see it now as Lucia, which was our old espresso machine in my office, with a steady light and some strobes. And we were totally amazed when we had our first go on that prototype, because suddenly there were colors and forms and things we never had expected, as the light was just a white light. And so that was the beginning of it all. And Lucia, as you see it now, is the result, which was made step by step out of that.
The Lucia lamp itself, so tell us a little bit more. You mentioned, obviously, it's quite amusing, the early version of that as a coffee machine, but tell us a little bit more about the development of that from your beginnings to where it is now, because it's quite an advanced piece of equipment at this stage. And also, I did read that you feel that you didn't really invent it in some ways, almost that this was something that was kind of waiting to happen.
Yeah, for us it is totally amazing how all this happened, because as we never intended doing something like that, and we had never had the impression that we had invented anything, it was just the other way around. For us it seemed as if something wanted to happen, and it took us to make it happen. Because there were so many coincidences, and the more we get involved in it, the more coincidences happen. One example, when we've been in a conference in Sweden, we had a tent, and the lamp was in the tent to not to make a problem for the others passing by with a flickering light. And suddenly I recognized a lady standing near the tent and listening to what the people said when they came out of the tent after the hypnagogic light experience. And when I went to that lady and asked her if she wants also to try the machine, and she told me no, she cannot, because she has a problem with her eyes. But she said that her name is Yulia Ustinova, and she just finished a work about the ancient Greek mystery cults, and she was totally stunned hearing that the people coming out of the tent said exactly the same as Parmenides more than 2,000 years ago after his mystery cult experience. And she told us that that she just finished her dissertation, I think it was, called Caves and the Ancient Greek Mind. And there she told us the Greek did the same. They brought people in caves where there was total darkness as a kind of sensory deprivation. And sometimes then the people were brought to another part of the cave where there was a fire. And in front of the fire there was a wheel when they turned the wheel, it gave a flickering effect. And so they had also a kind of stimulation with frequencies. So then that was the beginning that we started to get interested in that thing, and what we found out was really amazing, because they worked, they did that therapy in the same way as we did with the machine, bringing the people in that state of consciousness and looking what happened, and always happened something very amazing.
Okay, well, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the ancient origins of this and also near-death experiences in a few minutes. But in terms of the brain itself, how do you think this process works? Because we know that in nature, the effects of light on human beings and indeed on all living things are very important. In fact, you know, obviously without light, in our case, the sun, there could be no life. But just in terms of your work, what is the brain light interface, you know, and how do you think that, what the processes at work here?
I think nobody really knows how the brain does that, because nobody knows how the brain works. There are a lot of hypotheses about that. And I think, especially in connection with the near-death experience, the work of Rick Strassman, who did a research about the pineal gland and the DMT, which can induce a kind of near-death-like experience, is at the moment the most plausible. And we think that the pineal gland is involved. What we know is that in the pineal gland of rats, there had been there is proof that there is a DMT generation there. The pineal gland of rats produces DMT, and also in the eye there is a DMT, and in the lung of humans that is also known. And there is some research at the moment going on to try to prove it also in the pineal gland of humans. And so we think, as most of the scientists who are engaged in this area also think, that this is the most plausible hypothesis.
Now, the pineal gland, as you mentioned, is very, very important, though that importance, it, certainly in humans, seems to be have become lost to us, in the sense that, I mean, I've certainly read a lot about it being written off because it's not understood as, oh, yeah, it's nothing much, or it may have had significance at one time. But you mentioned about the pineal gland in rats. And of course, there are certain species of life on Earth that still have a, you know, what we would call a third eye, a third central eye. So what is your work? I mean, obviously, Rick Strassman, who I've interviewed a couple of times, he's one of many people who've done a lot of interesting work in this area. But from your personal perspective, what do you feel that you've learned about the potential significance of the pineal gland?
At the moment, I would say that the pineal gland, it's right to call it the third eye, because the pineal gland has some features of an eye. And there are some animals where the pineal gland even has the whole features of an eye. So I would say it's a good analogy to call it the third eye.
Okay, well, describe this device, describe the Lucia device to us, because we've been talking about light and flashing lights and what have you, and people looking at the latest version of this will be struck by its appearance. To me, actually, it looked like something out of a hospital or possibly a dental laboratory. Even some of the lamps I remember having hanging over my head when I was having my teeth worked on many years ago. So just tell people about this machine itself, its appearance, and how, you know, if people are having this experience with the machine, you know, machine, how they interact with it, how the process works.
The machine is a very easy to describe. It's just a constant light in the middle of a round thing, and surrounded, the constant light is surrounded by eight LED sets, which are the stroboscope. So it's a stroboscope which can flicker in any combination and in any frequency. And the constant light can get brighter and also can turn off. So you sit in front of the machine, close your eyes, and the machine starts with the constant light and the flickering. And this stimulates your brain doing something which the brain also does when it comes to extreme situations, just like near-death experience or in deep meditation. If you make an EEG from a person in front of the lamp, after 2 or 3 minutes, you can see so-called harmonics in the EEG. That means that the brain is taking over the frequency from the light and producing new frequencies, like overtones, which go in a symmetric way all across the EEG. These kind of harmonics are very interesting because they also show up when you are in real deep meditation. And sometime when we've been in Tibet, we had a Tibetan monk sitting in front of the machine. And after his trying the machine, he said Lucia took him immediately where he usually does his meditation. And I think this is a very accurate description. Because the machine does not do the meditation for you, but it opens a gate, and you can go through that gate and reach a depth of consciousness you usually do not without any training or something like that. And for me, as a psychotherapist, this seems to be the most interesting thing, because it's a consciousness behind our daily consciousness. And so it allows you to step back a little bit and to experience your being as something which is not what you normally think it is. Because normally we have a lot of experiences and we identify ourselves in a way with that experiences that we think we are what we experience. But when you go into that deep consciousness, which is also a psychedelic consciousness, then you see that there is something much more deeper, something which is just behind that all. And by doing that, the therapeutic effect establishes itself.
Okay, just a couple of brief technical points for listeners. Well, a few moments ago when you mentioned LED lights, you were simply meaning LEDs.
LEDs, they are just plain white LEDs, and they can pulse in different frequencies. They can either pulse in the same frequency, all the same, or also in different kind of frequencies. And it's interesting that, for instance, if the relation between the frequencies they are pulsing in are in the same relationship as the golden section, then the brain reacts even more interestingly, and the whole thing gets more and more beautiful, as it is, and it has to be, a most beautiful experience, which means that you can let yourself go into it.
Also, I will just get you to clarify for listeners who don't know what an EEG is, because you've mentioned that a couple of times.
The EEG is just a device which measures your brain activity so that you can see which kind of activity is going on in the brain. So there are, for instance, if there is an alpha or a beta activity, which means, for instance, a beta activity means that you are just in your normal waking state. If there is more alpha, then it means that you are in a slight relaxation. And if you are theta and delta, it means that you are sleeping. So you can see from the wavelength of the EEG, wavelengths which are shown in the EEG, what kind of activity is in the brain.
And when subjects are using the Lucia machine, the lamp, they are in a seated position. It looks like they're reclining, relaxed, but they also have their eyes closed and also got headphones on in order to exclude external sound for obvious reasons. But is there any particular significance from your point of view in the sound that they are actually hearing? Because yes, you can block out the external sound, but then it's okay, what do you replace it with?
Yeah, the headphones have the main reason to block out the external noise a little bit. But you can also listen to music. But if you listen to music or to other kind of sounds, it influences, of course, the experience. For instance, one of my clients is a 70-year-old woman, and she likes to hear Johann Sebastian Bach in combination with that. And she always has a very deep spiritual experience with that. others which are more interested in the psychedelic thing. They list, for instance, Pink Floyd, and they have their own Pink Floyd videos now then in the brain. And the interesting thing is it's always different. So even if you see the same combination of frequency again, you see different colors and forms, sometimes totally scenes, people, landscapes. It's totally unpredictable. It's always new.
Well, it's interesting you mention the psychedelic angle, because what people who are familiar with the effects of psychedelics, primarily through trying them themselves, because this is something that's very difficult to get across to anybody who hasn't tried psychedelics, it's just amazing how similar it is, and it makes me wonder about the processes that are involved. We talked earlier about the effects of light on the brain. This is purely light that you're using here. Whereas some people obviously go to great lengths with all sorts of psychoactive substances to achieve various effects. Now, we're not saying that using the Lucia device, for example, is exactly the same as consuming some form of psychedelic. It's not. But I just think it's interesting that this sort of psychedelic imagery is produced. And I'm wondering what variations you might have noticed in your subjects in people who have experience with psychedelics versus those who have none whatsoever, and what the differences are between what they're telling you about their experience with the Lucia lamp.
I think the similarities, that there are, of course, similarities. People who have experienced psychedelics and using the Lucia, they mention these similarities. But I would not say that it is the same. It's just two different ways to the same point, I would say. The psychedelics work in a way, when they start to work, you don't have a chance to turn it off or to change it a lot. With Lucia, it's much more milder, and you can change it and you can turn it off. So David Luke once said that people who are interested in psychedelics and never used them before should definitely maybe try Lucia first, because if they have problems with that, they never should use psychedelics, because then they can, because a psychedelic experience induced by a drug can be quite dangerous if you are not prepared for the overwhelming effect of the drug. And for me, drugs are a little bit critical, because as a psychotherapist, I work with clients who have used psychedelics and had bad experiences, which affected them a lot. So a psychedelic experience can be very overwhelming, and if you try to resist it, then it can bring you in deep trouble. It's the same with a near-death experience. There are also very, very bad near-death experience, even hellish near-death experience, which usually occur when the affected person tries to resist it. Once I had an interview with a guy who had a near-death experience when it started after a heart surgery, and it started with a tunnel experience, and he had the impression, now I'm going to die, and he gets so scared that he tried to resist the tunnel experience and to get out of the tunnel, which made the experience extremely frightening for him, with devilish images all over, and it was absolutely distressing for him. Till he came to a point where he did not resist anymore, and he gave up and let himself flow into it, which changed it immediately, and it got a very bright, light experience, and it was very peaceful then. And that's the same with all kind of deep psychedelic experience. So we are very careful with Lucia, always finding out first which kind of brightness, which kind of combination of frequency a person really likes and can use for going into it quite easily. And if you find out that, you can help a person going very, very deep. I would say then it is possible going as deep as with, for instance, a psychedelic drug, of course, or in a near-death experience, especially if you combine it, for instance, with certain breathing techniques or something.
Okay. Well, I've got to ask then, you're talking about near-death experiences and some negative experiences from that. And obviously psychedelics, people will know, and you mentioned, you know, people coming out of that with negative experiences that changed their lives greatly, and they're trying to recover from that. Have you actually had any, you know, we're wanting to sort of promote the Lucia device here, but have you had any negative experiences from people who are completely new to this sort of thing? Because, I mean, I've met people in my life who have been completely straight. They've had one or two puffs on a cannabis joint, and it sent them half crazy, and they just thought, well, I'm never doing anything like that again. Whereas for some people, that was just like, oh, yeah, you know, no, whatever, you know. And it's just the different way that individuals' brains, their consciousness reacts to perhaps a little glimpse of there being other levels of consciousness. You know, consciousness. Some people are very comfortable with it. They're very interested. They're fascinated. Other people are really traumatized. They're disturbed by the idea of deeper or higher levels of reality that maybe they don't have control over.
Yeah, of course, there are people who react negatively if the lamp is turned on. But as I told you before, you can turn it off immediately and nothing happens. Or you can change the frequency and the brightness, and you can influence the experience by that. But one thing is very important. A negative experience does not mean that it is worthless. Sometimes just the contrary is the case. In therapy, for instance, it is very useful if you work, for instance, with traumatized person, and if you sit them in front of the lamp that can reproduce a traumatic experience in a way which is so intense that the people can go through the trauma once again, which in a therapeutical setting is very, very useful, because you can treat the trauma in a way you usually cannot so easy. Or with anxiety disorders. Anxiety disorders react very spontaneous on the lamp. So if someone suffers from panic attack and I'm switching on the lamp, he immediately gets one. And a very intense one, of course. And when I then turn off the flickering light and just the bright light to a pleasant level, it's immediately a pleasant experience again. And if I go back, he can stay that a little bit longer, because then the client knows if he says stop, I can turn it off and turn it into a most in a pleasant experience. And by doing that, step by step, you can use the lamp in a way to desensibilize the client for the anxiety. That works very well, and it works that effective that for anxiety therapy, it is a very, very helpful tool. And for that, it is very necessary to induce, first of all, a very unpleasant experience, because that's the reason the client comes to me to making therapy. Because usually that's exactly the problem. If someone has anxiety disorders and he goes to the therapist, usually in the therapeutic situation, he does not have a panic attack because he feels safe with the therapist in the same room. So you have to train the client doing things he has to do when the anxiety is coming. But when you have the possibility of inducing the problem, then you can do it in the therapy session, and that is really extremely effective. And by that way, I found out with my clients that there seems also to be a link between the level of anxiety and how sensible someone is for light, just for bright light, not with, and I'm speaking not of flickering light. When a client with an anxiety disorder comes to me and I sit in front of the lamp and I turn on the bright light and make it brighter and brighter, he very soon says, oh, now it's too bright. After the therapy had worked and after the anxiety disorder is under control or gone totally, then he can stand much more brightness and enjoy it. So there are a lot of therapeutic possibilities in connection with, first, with negative experience.
You mentioned near-death experiences now a few times, and that's a whole other discussion in itself. But what, and also you mentioned Kenneth Ring's work I recently just finished reading actually Lessons from the Light, and I know that's an old book, but it was wonderful reading about all the cases that he dealt with. The idea of the near-death experience, as Ring himself pointed out, has entered popular culture somewhat now. So most people will have some idea of what we're talking about, but what's the particular overlap with that and the Lucia Lamp effect? You're talking about that. Are we talking about the same type of potential there in terms of changing people's perspective, their self-image, you know, their sense of consciousness that a near-death experience could have? I mean, is there the potential for this sort of light therapy to do something that powerful?
Yeah, I think so. I once used the lamp for a year or so when I worked at a hospice regularly in Innsbruck, and I worked with a dying person, and it helped him a lot. Going into the light experience, prepare for dying and tune into the dying process in a way that he was totally not afraid anymore. I think there is an overlap between the two, in a way that if you experience, that's what many of the near-death experienced people say, if you experience in that light how the thing which you thought that you are vanishes, and something which is much more bigger and much more limitless stays, and that's what you really are, then you are not afraid anymore, because you know nothing happens at all. Just the contrary, it's not that death takes something away, it's just a change in a totally undescribable way, which usually in a way that people, after they are reanimated, sometimes are angry about, that they are reanimated.
Another thing I want to ask you about is one of the first things that came to mind when I watched the Lucia demonstration videos was amongst the flashing lights, and I thought it was a stroboscopic effect here, and I thought about all the warnings that we get on television when there's going to be some images coming up involving flashing lights, and they're thinking particularly of viewers who may have epilepsy or similar. What that made me think of was how something like epilepsy, judged as, you know, an affliction, and of course it appears in many ways to be just that, but I've read so many times about different categories of so-called mental illness, including something like schizophrenia, which of course appear to be very disruptive and even devastating to individuals suffering from them. But I've read researchers who are saying at the core here is something that is misunderstood and is not necessarily negative, but it's about how it particularly affects an individual, and mainly as how we as a society judge it, and how the difference between our modern societies and how we judge people who have a different perspective, how shall we say, or appear to have a disturbing visionary experiences, and between that and how some indigenous societies would have treated people who were touched, is a word that we have in English that we sometimes use, or just different somehow. So I don't know, in all of your work, whether you've come to ponder different mental states and mental conditions that sometimes that get labeled by us as illness, which are something that perhaps are not wholly negative, but are misunderstood and maybe just a bit over amplified or maybe out of balance in the individual's brain, but are actually telling us something about potential that we have in our brain and our consciousness, and maybe that schizophrenia or epilepsy and similar are manifestations of this that are just, you know, imbalanced somehow, but that there might be some real interesting learning for us in all of that.
Yeah, that's a very interesting thing. First, epilepsy, there is optical epilepsy, which can be detected by flickering light. That's what a neurologist does when he does the diagnosis. But we found out that you can use the flickering light also to treat epilepsy. Dirk, my colleague, who is a neurologist, once had a client who suffered from severe epilepsy, and you could see the epileptic potential in his brainwave patterns in the EEG. When this client was sitting in front of the lamp, he could change the way looking into the lamp so that he did not get a seizure. So you could, but for that, you have to use the lamp very, very sensible. So the client is sitting in front of the lamp and manage that the flickering just goes to the edge of the seizure, which the client senses. And then the client can do something by looking differently into it that no seizure happens. And for that particular client, after the treatment, there was still the same potential in his brainwave pattern. So there has nothing changed, but he had no seizures anymore. And there is, we once met a guy in America who had a kind of similar technology with flickering, just a different kind of device, but the same, nearly the same effect, which he could induce. But there you have to look with open eyes. And he reported the same. And also that there are some people who have temporal lobe epilepsy, who try to, bring themselves into a seizure because there happens some things they like so much, spiritual experiences, for instance, they say they are worth the seizure and they try to induce a seizure by themselves. And also with psychosis, for instance, schizophrenia, there are different reasons for that. There are some there surely are some degenerative brain problems which cause a misfunction of the brain, and that produces the symptoms of schizophrenia in a way that you clearly have a disease, a brain disease. But it seems that these are not so many cases. More cases, there has been a lot of research on that, by people like Stanislav Grof and others, who came to the conclusion that a psychosis sometimes is a mishappened self-healing of the brain. And if you don't treat it in a conventional way by using the medication, which usually chronifies it, but helping the people going through the psychotic process differently, just interestingly, just like through a bad trip, then it could be that the outcome is better health than even before the schizophrenic symptoms occurred. So I'm sure that modern psychiatry has a very limited understanding of what's going on in some psychotic illnesses. And by making the diagnosis and by treating the people, they causing the problems more than helping the people.
Well, it's fascinating that you touch upon the spiritual aspect of that again, because, and we both mentioned Rick Strassman earlier, and one of the interviews I did with him was around his book DMT and the Soul of Prophecy, and he linked the psychedelic experience in this case, a naturally occurring DMT within the human body, to a religious experience, not one that reading his accounts of it would be, we'd read as psychedelic, and the origin of religions themselves. And this ties back to what you were saying earlier about Greek caves and in the ancient world and flickering fire and various ways of manipulating light. And I think that, again, we could do a whole discussion around this in itself, but I think there's fascinating lines that we can trace back here in terms of ecstatic experience and what that leads people to when they try to impart this to others. If you see what I mean, when they have this sort of experience, transcendent experience, and they then try and recount it to others, express it to others who themselves haven't had it, and then possibly over thousands and thousands of years, this experience becomes more diluted, more watered down until it's almost meaningless, and the roots of it may be in someone's profound transcendent experience of another type of consciousness, but all this time later, it is reduced to a few symbols and rituals that no one understands anymore.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. There has been also a lot of research. I think the scientist called Zaleski, she looked at the core of religious, how different religious religions developed, and she found that at the core there always was some kind of experience of certain people, and these experiences were quite similar. If you look at the experience of Saint Paul, for instance, you find it everywhere. Light experienced, nearly expressed in exactly the same way, in the same language. But the religions to which they lead, they were totally, something totally different. I think, religions, are kind of, as you call a watered down thing, which has nothing to do with the original. And it may be a good time, especially when you look into the world and see what happens out of religious reasons, really worse things. When you see that in the original, it is a very, very spiritual experience, a very positive one, which leads to positive effects that people get more in love with one another and not in the other side. So the best thing could be going back to the original experience and finding ways, and there are lots of ways, and Lucia is one, psychedelic experience is another one, helping as many people as possible finding their individual way into that experience so that they don't need others to tell them what to think or how to worship or something like that. Because if you want to know something about a God or spiritual things, you have to go inside of yourself and not listen to anybody other.
I think it's very interesting that you have traditional indigenous societies, those of them that are still remaining, many of them have some kind of deliberately induced psychedelic experience as part of the mystical or religious experience. And by contrast, you would have organized religions, the great world religions, you know, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, whatever. And the general message there would be, with regard to indigenous practices, would be, well, you know, whether it's ayahuasca or whether it's cannabis or LSD or, you know, DMT or whatever it happens to be, you know, any naturally occurring psychedelic substance. Oh, well, that can't tell you anything about the nature of reality. That can't bring you closer to God. You may feel that it does, but it's, you know, it's a false God. There is a, you know, it's almost like, it's strange how the great separation there, because for many people who have these sorts of individual subjective religious or mystical experiences, it is very much one-on-one. It's personal. It's them in direct contact with something transcendent. Whereas the great religions that I spoke of, they over time have become this mediator, you know, you can only come to God or a higher understanding through us. And I just find that sort of the contrast fascinating.
That is exactly the problem. You can experience it by yourself, but you cannot tell it in a way to someone else that he can do something with it. He can. The best thing is it can inspire him to make his own experience. But the worst thing which can happen is that you try to use an own experience to make it a kind of advice for someone other. It's not possible. The best thing is, which is also the word, the meaning of the word therapist, to help someone going with him, helping him to go have into his own experience that he can see for himself. Everything other is manipulation of people, and that's definitely not good.
Now, we talked about the therapeutic benefits of the Lucia device several times now. One of the things that comes out of people who've had profound near-death experiences, and as I say, for me, having just recently completed reading Kenneth Ring's Lessons from the Light, was how people came away from that, not only losing their fear of death, but wanting to become better people and wanting to help others. And this makes me think about all the movements that there are now for change in the world and how many things that people feel are, so many systems are in breakdown and path that we're on is very dark and there's no hope for the future. And yet and all, there's so much work being done to try and improve things. And for me, I feel that where that begins is actually with individuals and a change in their self-image, their image of others, their view of reality and their state of consciousness. And by this, I don't mean one of these consciousness shifts that was talked about around 2012. You know, I'm not talking about anything magical that's going to happen to the human race en masse, but it's literally changes along the lines that I've just mentioned that start within each of us that then become projected outwards. And that's where I see change actually being able to happen. And I think it is actually happening and always has been. I just think that we become so focused on short-termism as a species, it seems we have been up until now for the longest time, that we don't really, you know, everything's about here and now, a few lifetimes before now, a couple of lifetimes after now, and we don't zoom out to see the bigger picture that this might be just part of a journey we're on. And so just to boil all that down, I think that it's a change in our perspective of ourselves and others and of everything around us and of the greater reality itself that will bring change. And this is where experiences such as the Lucia Light device or any other experience that people can have to guide them out of, or however, whatever sort of word you would care to use, out of their stasis, can open up a lot of this other potential.
Yeah, that's exactly the impression that also we have. If you look at the daily news, you see a lot of bad things happen all over, war and all of that, all those refugees, and you have the impression everything is going from worse to worse. But ever since we are going around with our lamp, we meet more and more people who are interested in that, finding their own ways of going into the experience, and it makes us very optimistic. And that's the reason we have the impression that something real great is happening, and we are a small part of that, contributing with our light experience to that, because I think it's exactly that's the case. More and more people get interested in such kind of things and having their own experience, and that changes them a lot. They're losing the anxiety, and anxiety makes that people are manipulated, and that's exactly the point.
Okay, well, just as we begin to bring things to a close for today, Engelbert, if there are people listening to this who have no personal experience of anything that, so shall we say, are psychedelic or transcendent, or there's so many different words that we could use, different words that we bandied about in this conversation, but they're perhaps intrigued by the Lucia lamp, but they're kind of, oh, I'm not sure about this. It sounds like it's mind-bending. I could come away from this warped or whatever. And what would you say to someone who's completely new to any of this? Let's just say they've walked into one of your events and they're looking at your device and you're stood next to it and you're saying, hello, want to have a try? And I'm not so sure. I mean, what do you say to someone like that?
I would say that he can try the lamp and have an impression of an experience which might change his attitude a little bit, and he can have it in a way that very individual for him, so it will not harm him, because we will do it very, very easy, because we have some demo programs which just give him a slight impression if he likes it at all and if it's something he wants to go deeper in. So it's something which is very easy.
Okay, well, I know that you're out and about at the moment. In fact, as I speak to you, you're right here in England. If people actually want to have this experience, what's the best way to go about it? Is it to check out your website? You know, do you sort of regularly tour around, or people need to come to you? I mean, how do you work this?
Yeah, the best thing is going to our website and see where is the next person for the lamp, because they are all over the world now at the moment. In London, there is Matt having a lamp. In America, there are people everywhere. So And we are also, Dirk and me, we're also traveling around. So on our website, you see a lot of information which you can help you to get a little bit deeper into the matter. And there's also a link to YouTube where you can see how other people report about their own light experience. So you can make yourself opinion and decide whenever, wherever you want to do that. So it should not be too hard to have a try.
Okay. Well, just in closing, would you like to share some of those websites for people and anything else that you'd like to put out there?
The original homepage is gesundimlicht.at, which is German. But there is also an English homepage, which is the name Mount Analog UK.
Yeah, well, that's excellent. We'll have all the links for those on the relevant program page on the website. So once again, Engelbert, thank you so much for joining us today on LegalizeFreedom.com.
Okay, thank you, Greg.
Well, folks, that's it for another week. As ever, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, check out the website, which is LegalizeFreedom.com. That's legalize-freedom.com, where you'll find an archive of programs offering alternative views on a wide range of topics, including politics and economics, energy and environment, culture, spirituality, history, and the nature of reality. You can also browse and buy a range of publications from our guests, and if you're feeling generous, make a donation to help keep the site up and running. Whether you listen, donate, or do both, I greatly appreciate your support. Until next time, I'm Greg Moffat, and you've been listening to LegalizeFreedom.com.